our brothers and sisters. So there's a little bit of introduction. Let's transition out of that and get into this week's stuff by helping me just get a little idea of where you are in your TV viewing habits. I'm curious how many of you watch The Voice with any regularity. Anyone? Three of you. Okay, not a popular show. Four. Okay, there's a few of you like, maybe should I admit to that? Yeah, you can admit to that. How about Chopped? Any Chopped fans here? Food Network? Yep, okay. Our home, big Chopped family. Survivor? Any Survivor fans? Anyone? Okay, apparently not. How about American Idol? It's back, everybody. American Idol, huh? Who's excited about? Wow, interesting. So you're a very, okay. Good. So you're a group who's not into these shows. That's fine. You're a lot like my wife. We've been having a little battle over the remote control around American Idol. I find myself kind of wandering there occasionally, I'll confess to you. In my defense, we were big fans in the Kelly Clarkson era. You know, way back in the beginning, we watched the show a lot. Haven't watched it for years. Now it's back. I hear Lionel Richie's a kinder, gentler presence than Simon Cowell. I'm intrigued. I want to learn more, right? So occasionally we end up there. And I was thinking about, why do I like that show? Why do I like Chopped? Probably lots of reasons. They're all very different. But one thing that kind of struck me, and it's probably because of this passage that we've been kind of ruminating on for a few weeks. I think one of the reasons I really like that show and others like it is because I like to judge. I do. I like to sit in my seat of judgment, also known as my couch, look at a slew of budding vocalists, hopeful singers, frantic chefs, whoever they are, and make a determination about who is best. That's fun. It's kind of fun to do. Do you agree? Oh, they're terrible. You know, they're a terrible singer. If you watch it with people, this is the stuff that comes out. Oh my gosh, that was amazing. Oh, they're so unique. Whatever it is, right? We love to kind of sit and make judgments about people, their talent, their ability. Well, again, we're in Romans 14, and you can start heading there if you'd like. I'll be reading from the NIV. The scripture will be on the screen, too. Romans 14 has a lot to do with judgment and the judgment that we dish out upon each other. If you haven't been here the last couple of weeks, here's a very quick summary of the issues at stake in this chapter. In this chapter, we learn that the early church is fighting about two things. There's deep conflict about when should the Sabbath be observed and should Christians be allowed to eat food, meat specifically sacrificed to Roman gods. Those issues sound lame to us and unimportant and irrelevant, right? I mean, we just kind of hit the snooze button when we come to those, I imagine. But as I contended last week, those two issues were as contentious and fraught with passion and anger and disagreement as any issue present in the church today, period. Someone challenged me on that last week very kindly, and I'm glad they did because it really led to another good conversation. They said, is that really true? I think it is, because the issues at stake here were not just about theology. They were about how you interpreted the Bible. Sound familiar? Right? How do you interpret the Ten Commandments? That's what's at stake in those two issues. And they had a lot to do with identity. Jewish Christians said these things, and non-Jewish Gentile Christians held generally these viewpoints. And so they were fighting about identity, like who belonged. Because to be Jewish meant you had Sabbath on this day and you didn't eat these kinds of foods. And so to take that away was to take away someone's sense of identity, their sense of connectedness to the past, their sense of belonging in a group or not belonging. Okay. So that's where we are, Romans 14. We're going to read a collection of verses starting in verse 1 down to 4 and then 10 and 13. And I have a few words highlighted here as we go along. Accept the one whose faith is weak without quarreling over disputable matters. One person's faith allows them to eat anything, but another whose faith is weak eats only vegetables. The one who eats everything must not treat with contempt the one who does not. And the one who does not eat everything must not judge the one who does. For God has accepted them. There's that idea again, that God has accepted people on both sides of these opposing viewpoints. Who are you to judge someone else's servant? And then down to verse 10. You then, why do you judge your brother or sister? Or why do you treat them with contempt? For we will all stand before God's judgment seat. And then verse 13. Therefore, let us stop passing judgment on one another. All right, so today we're going to look at some Greek, which is a real good time, I know. But hang in there with me, because these words really actually matter. They're the words that are highlighted here. All right, and if you're a note taker, I don't know, these might be worth jotting about. Maybe you can throw them out at a cocktail party and impress some people. The first Greek word is krino. Everyone say that. Krino. Nice and easy. Nice and easy, right? Krino. It's the word that gets translated back here to judge, right? To pass judgment. It also can mean to condemn, or interestingly, it can mean to separate, right? This is making a judgment about another person that leads to separation. This is not the kind of judgment about a hot dog, about whether it's good or bad, cooked properly, has the right condiments. This isn't a judgment about an object. This is a judgment about a person, and it has a certain tone to it, has a certain way of viewing that person. And we get a fuller sense of that when we look at the other Greek word that was highlighted there, exotheneo. Say that one, exotheneo. To make no account of, to despise utterly. That's the word that gets translated in the NIV, contempt. To make no account of. What do you think that means? Isn't that an interesting phrase? We don't use that kind of language in that way all that often. Right? But this is a loaded word. Again, this is exotheneo is much, much more than saying that I think you're wrong or I disagree with you. That's not what exotheneo is. Because there's actually nothing really wrong, at least not here in Romans 14, with disagreement. Right? Are we on track on that? Paul is not saying to the Christians, you shouldn't disagree ever. You should all think exactly the same all the time, because you know what? God's plan is for a monolithic, homogenous, all vanilla community. That's what God's up to. Right? Paul doesn't say that. So the call in Romans 14 is not to somehow get rid of all disagreement or for me to never say to you, I actually disagree with you. That's not the instruction here. The instruction is to not hold each other in contempt, exotheneo, which is to judge someone in a way that you think that they have no value. You utterly despise them. You make no account of them. It's as if they don't even really exist. That's what this word is getting at here. And it was happening among those first Christians. It still is happening today. We do this today by throwing people into categories. I think that's a common practice of exotheneo today. We throw people into categories. We label them, right? We say they're stupid. They're so conservative. They've been brainwashed. They're so liberal. They're so ignorant. We exotheneo each other. We don't just say, I disagree with you. We say, I disagree with you and I think you're an idiot. You know, I think you have no value. You are brainless. You have not thought this through. You are whatever, right? And we make no account of that person. We exotheneo each other. A few months ago, I was at a denominational meeting, standing in line with a bunch of other pastors. It was the quintessential definition of a good time. And as we're standing there, I end up talking with a fellow pastor. I've known this guy for a number of years, just on and off, not well, but I've known of him. We've had a couple of interactions. He's a good guy. But I've learned in those interactions that we're very different people. Theologically, we hold some pretty significant differences. How we view the church and what we think the church should be doing in the world and how the church should be engaging in the world. We have some differences there. Anyway, he's telling us this story as we're standing in line, a group of people, about how he had just been to Nordstrom's Rack and he found this dress for his wife for 35 cents. And it was like a dress that she loved when he brought it home, and he thought, man, this is just so amazing. And we were all stunned, like 35 cents, what's going on? You know, we were, wow, that's really amazing and incredible. And he said, actually, that's not it. This has happened twice. Twice, he says. There was another time a couple months ago where I was at Nordstrom's Rack, and there was this pair of shoes I know my wife would love, and it was like a quarter. And I was like, man, you are so lucky. And he stopped smiling, looked at me, and said, I don't believe in luck. I believe in the favor of God. And in one quick comment, he made a judgment about me and my theology, or at least that's what I thought was kind of happening. That was what I kind of internalized it to be, that he was making a judgment about me and really saying your theology has no account. It has no value. And so I'll be honest with you, I was hurt, angered in that moment. And so do you know what I did? I got up in my seat of judgment and handed down some exotheneo myself, you know. I didn't do it out loud. Of course, I'm a conflict avoider, so I didn't do anything out loud. But in my mind, I let him have it, I will tell you. I mean, I made 12 different judgments about him and his theology. I put him into categories. Labels that I had already determined for him were reinforced. I mean, I found a way to kind of dehumanize him, to make of no account this guy that was standing in line next to me. Exotheneo is so tempting, and it is so easy to do. And yet there is such a clear call here in Romans 14 to avoid contempt and judgment. Not to avoid disagreement, let me say that again, but to avoid contempt and judgment that leads to this kind of making of no account. And why does Paul go after this so hard? I think one reason is that we're not qualified to judge. Verse 4, did you catch it? We read it. We read it a moment ago. Who are you to judge someone else's servant, Paul asks. Who are you? You know, have you ever had a time when you thought you had another person pegged? You told yourself, I know who this person is. I know their type. I can tell you what they think, who they voted for. I bet they're vegetarian, you know, right? You look at them, you make a judgment, and you put them into your categories. You peg them. Well, for my Nordstrom's Rack pastor friend, I had him pegged. You know, I knew his type. Boxed him up, put a bow on him, nailed him. But did I? Did I know the nearly countless experiences he had growing up that shaped his worldview? Had I heard his stories of what his family of origin was like, what his structure and his home led to him to come to think and believe and view the world. Did I know his wounds? Was I aware of the pain that he's known and how that shaped him? Have I ever taken the time to ask him how he's arrived at his convictions? Do I even know what's at the heart of his viewpoint? See, if I step down from this seat of judgment for just a moment, I begin to realize that he and every other human being is infinitely complex. And as much as I might love to label someone because it's convenient and self-aggrandizing to label someone, it's also woefully inadequate. Because the only one capable of looking at you and looking at me and understanding how complex we are and the multitude of stories and experiences and people that have shaped us and gotten us to this place where we hold the convictions that we hold, the only one capable of knowing that about us is the one who made us. Humanity doesn't have the chops to judge accurately. We don't. We don't have the ability, the understanding, the breadth of knowledge to make a complete and accurate judgment about another person. We don't. And so who are you to judge, Paul asks. Well, you're not. You're not. Again, that doesn't mean that you can't make a judgment. We got to be careful here. It's not that I can't disagree with you. It's not that I can't listen to you and think, you know what, I think actually on this one I'm right and you're wrong, or I think I may have a better understanding or perspective than you do. We're talking about the kind of judgment that leads to contempt and to exotheneo and to this making of no account. So one reason I think we're called not to do that is because we're not qualified. And the other, as painfully obvious as it is, it needs to be said, an undeniable consequence of judgment and condemnation is separation. In verse 20, we didn't read it today, but we've read it in weeks past. Paul implores the Christians there in Rome to not tear apart the work that God is doing over what they eat and don't eat. The fabric of the Christian community was being ripped to shreds as people sat in the seat of judgment and handed down condemnation upon condemnation. And we see the same thing happening today. When someone has labeled you, has this ever happened? When someone has labeled you, called you this or that, discounted your viewpoint, told you you were wrong, ignorant, misinformed, my guess is that your first thought was not, gosh, let's have them over for dinner. Exotheneo leads to separation, distance between people, and it destroys the very thing God has called us to create. So what's the alternative? Is the message of Romans 14, hey, just stop? Stop condemning, stop holding people in contempt, stop judging people in that way. Is it all about stopping that? Actually, I don't think it is. That's part of it, perhaps. But there's something else that we're called to, and it's right there in verse 1. It's the first word that we read. The NIV translates it, accept, which is the Greek word, proslambano. Say that one, proslambano. Check out the varying definitions here for this word. To take to oneself. To take to oneself. To take as one's companion. To take or receive into one's home with the collateral idea of kindness. To receive, i.e., to grant one access to one's heart. And then even to take into friendship and intercourse. Ooh. Now, to be clear, Paul's not calling all of us into that sort of activity together. But I included that up there because I do want you to see the kind of intimacy and closeness that is carried in this word. There's no distance here. Would you agree? Proslambano. There's an intimacy. Even if you just think about the intimacy of inviting someone into your home. And the word here that shows up is to take, to receive. It is a word of action and intentionality. Proslambano does not happen by accident. It requires intentionality. And this is hard for us. I was reading this article this week in the an online from Vox, which Vox tends to lean left. But this article was not leaning left or right or any one way. It was trying to talk about 9 psychological essential lessons to learn from psychology. 9 essential lessons to learn from psychology for how we live in the current political era that we find ourselves. And one of the lessons was this, that our brains are wired to fight off ideas that make us uncomfortable. So they did this experiment last year where they took two groups of people, partisan people, with opposing and very strongly held viewpoints. And they said to them, we'd like you to read an article and then answer some questions, but you have a choice. You can either choose articles and questions that represent your viewpoint, or you can choose articles and questions that are the opposite of your viewpoint. And to kind of make things interesting, if you choose to read the things that you already agree with, then we'll enter you into a raffle for $7. $7 raffle. Don't know why they chose seven, but they did. And if you choose to read the things that you don't agree with, you'll be entered into a $10 raffle. And the kind of thinking here was, the hypothesis was, that money kind of wins out, even though it's just a few bucks. But we are going to probably choose more money than less money, especially when we're talking about just reading something. We're not talking about like having somebody into your home or changing your mind. We're just talking about reading an article and answering some questions. People will choose to read the opposing viewpoint because they'll have the chance to win more money. You know where this is headed. Over 2/3 of the people chose to read the things that they already agreed with. And one of the researchers kind of looked at all of their results. They did a couple of other tests or ran a couple of other experiments. And this was the line that grabbed me. He says, they don't know what's going on the other side. Both groups did not know what was going on the other side. So this, the issue being debated here, the articles they were to read about was around same-sex marriage. And they said, these people, they don't know what's going on the other side. And this group of people, they don't know what's going on this side. They don't know what they think, why they think it. They don't know that. And they don't want to know. They don't know what's going on the other side, and they don't want to know. Just think about your own life for a moment. Does this ring true in any way? Not only don't we know maybe how the person on the other side of the issue has gotten to their place of conviction. We don't know their story. We haven't taken the time to learn all the things that have molded and shaped them into who they are today and why they think the way they do. We don't know that. And we don't want to know. We'd perhaps rather remain ignorant. We'd rather not take the time, the energy, the risk to take that step. I don't think this is the way of Christ, though. It's not the way of proslambano. This call to accept one another that Paul gives to them requires intentionality. It requires action. And Paul's saying this about the person who was on the opposite theological side of the spectrum. Let me go back to that story about my Nordstrom's Rack colleague. Believe it or not, a couple of months after that initial encounter, we were at another event together. And I didn't know we were going to be at that event together. And so when I walked in the door and saw him, I literally stopped and started to turn around. I wanted to just leave, right? Because condemnation and judgment leads to separation. But I knew I couldn't leave. I like couldn't get away with it. And so I then immediately started to devise a plan for how our paths would not cross. You know, like maybe if I sat at this table over here and if he was over there and I never got in line when he got in line for food or what, like maybe I could just avoid him. And then in a moment of clarity, I cannot attribute it to myself. I think this is God's Spirit. I saw a picture of how this was all going to end if I maintained distance with him. If I would continue to harbor my anger, if I would continue to hold him in contempt and hang on to my judgment, then we, who are brothers, according to the scriptures, members of the same body, each a part of God's family, we would remain separated. And so, again, by God's grace, I went to the table that he was sitting at, and I sat down. I tried to proslambano. And guess what? We both apologized, and all wrongs were made right, and we became best friends who lived happily ever after in a castle by the sea, you know. Here's what did happen. I got a brief glimpse into just how complex of a person he was and is. That's one thing that happened as we sat down at that table together. He didn't completely fit into the labels and categories that I'd put him in. Dang it. You know. Just in small ways, I began to see some complexities. I began to hear about very human things, like he's a dad who's struggling to raise his kids. You know, I can get that. I can have compassion for that. Not you. It's not you. Don't worry. And there in that time and space, it probably wasn't much more than 15 or 20 minutes. I was reminded of how poorly qualified I am to judge another person. Because certainly to hold them in contempt. Because I have no real sense of just how human he is, you know. But I was learning a little bit of that as we sat at that table. And in the time together, not only did I realize that I had no right to really judge him, I didn't belong in that seat, I was also reminded that we're a part of something bigger together. There were a number of things that were said in those 15 to 20 minutes that made me realize that we probably never will be best friends down by the sea in a castle. But we do hold some things together, some shared beliefs and commitments. We might go about them different ways, but I saw in him some ways that we were alike. This is the problem with labels and holding people in contempt, right, is that we dehumanize them. They don't become people, they become categories. And in that time at that table, as I tried to proslambano, he became more human. And that was really important in God knitting us together. So let me ask a couple of questions as we close, and they're around these Greek words that we've been looking at today. The first question is this: is exotheneo anywhere in your life today? Is it showing up anywhere in your life where you are holding another in contempt? You are making them of no account. You are utterly despising them. Is that present anywhere in your life? If it is, the call of the gospel is to let that go. Doesn't mean you can't disagree. Doesn't mean that you can't hold a different viewpoint. But to make someone of no account is to deny the fact that they're made in the image of God. So is this happening anywhere in your life? Do you need to confess that today, let go of that today? And then the second question is, what would it look like for you to proslambano? And again, you know, there's a lot of nuance here, and there's not a clever little formula to follow that'll tell you exactly what to do or what this looks like. I'm just raising the question and trusting that God will speak to you, that your ears will be open, that you will be ready to hear if there is something that you could do or should do to move towards another person who you've otherwise been separated from. When I think about this word here, one thing that strikes me is that I have been on the receiving end of proslambano. that God has taken me toward him. That God has received me. That kindness has abounded. Over and over again, God has moved towards me. And it's only because of that, because I have some small sense of God's grace and acceptance of me, that I have the chance of extending that same kind of grace and acceptance to another. And my prayer is that this morning, this meal may help cement for you this reality that you have been proslambanoed by God. That God has taken you, has received you. This bread and this cup reminders of the extent of God's love, the width of God's embrace, the determination that God has, the intentionality that God has in moving towards you. So, I want to invite you to share in this meal with us this morning.